Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Bros Pod is, of course, brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline is back and better than ever. A new web interface for the start of the basketball season and more props, odds, and lines than ever before. BetOnline remains your number one spot for all the basketball and football action this season. Of course, college basketball started this week, so that's even more basketball action for you to take part in. So head to the new updated desktop or mobile website to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use our promo code BELEAV50, that's BLEAV50, to receive your bonus. From basketball, football, baseball postseason, NHL, boxing, and UFC, right to your favorite Vegas casino games, don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for the 2021 season. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet all your favorite sports. BetOnline, where the game starts.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another version of Bill Rodenau Sports. I'm here in an undisclosed location in upstate New York, really raining out here. I know our guest is, well, we'll talk about our guest. I don't know when the last time he's seen rain. But here with my friend and my co-host, the great Jamal Murphy, holding it down in Brooklyn. Murph, what's going on?
What's up, Bill? Everything's good here. Rainy as well in Brooklyn. Supposed to rain all day, so that this should be fun. Should be a fun day. My son is supposed to have baseball practice, so I might get out of that. You know, November baseball. It's great.
Yeah, I don't know. I think they're going to make him play. And we'll talk about why. That may be our guest's new book, but U Sports, the golden goose. Yeah. Anyway,
big industry.
Yeah, yeah. So I'd like to introduce, we have a great guest, a really good friend, outstanding journalist, author, the great Michael Arkosh. Michael Arkosh lives in, now he lives out west in California. And we always get this wrong, Michael. He's the author of 12 books or 17. Is it?
15.
Is it 15?
Yeah.
Well, we're giving you two more. We're giving you two more.
I'll take them.
But every time I talk to Mike, I have to say we've been friends for quite a while, and you know, he's been a good friend, source of inspiration, trying to always goad me into completing the book. You know, like he's been 15, I'm like on two. And you know, how do you know, Michael? It's funny. What's your philosophy about that for our readers? For our listeners, sometimes I tell young people in our industry, you can't compare yourself. That's one of the worst things you could do, is begin comparing yourself to other people. However, it is difficult. You know, if you know, in our business and being an author, I don't know how you feel, but when, you know, you've written, let's say some people have not written any books, some people have written like 20. What's your philosophy about that? I mean, like I said, you've been very productive. We're going to talk about your latest book coming up with Scottie Pippen. But just in general, what's your advice to young people, students? You know, everybody wants to write books. Everybody wants to do stuff. But what's been your philosophy about comparing yourself to other people in the business?
It's a no-win proposition. You don't want to do it. There are too many people who have accomplished too much to try to set in terms of volume and quality. And you can wind up just getting down on yourself because, oh, I haven't written 25 books, or I haven't written, you know, Unbroken or something, right? But I think it's actually a source of inspiration to me to see people do that, because it gives me hope that if I come up with the right idea and work hard enough, I too can attain something close to that. But I don't think you want to be necessarily compare yourself directly to one person or another. I don't think it's a good idea.
Yeah, I guess there's a thin line between inspiration and comparison. You know, you can look up to people who've done stuff and say, well, I like to do that.
Yeah, but I mean, it's true about the books themselves or articles or magazine pieces. I mean, you can read a paragraph or say, oh boy, I wish I had read that, is so good. But that's great, because you feel like, okay, I just have to continue aspiring to that. That's all.
Yeah. Yeah. So speaking of comparison, I just want to read a list of your subjects. Like I said, your latest book is with Scottie Pippen, which is outstanding. And it just literally came out, right? Finally.
Tuesday.
It came out Tuesday. Your subjects have include, you've written about the fight of the century with Muhammad Ali won. In fact, I was doing something on the anniversary of it to ESPN, and I reread it. Just an excellent job.
Thank you. Then
you've written books with Ray Allen, Sugar Ray Leonard, Kurt Menefee, Tim Allen, Payne Stewart, Lee Steinberg, even Rush Limbaugh, which was, I think, an unauthorized biography.
That was definitely unauthorized, yeah.
The point to point that out. You've written for Yahoo Sports, The Washington Post. I think we first met when you were writing for the New York Times. You wrote Golf World, People Magazine, the LA Times, Pasadena Star News, Flint Journal, anything I'm missing. And then, but it just, you just had a remarkable career, man. Just a remarkable career. And I always like to tell the story. We had one conversation, and because you know, with a lot of this, you were doing freelance stuff. At one point you made a vow that you decided that you only wanted to do books. And I always thought that was so fascinating. Just kind of repeat how that came along. Like you had this great career as a journalist, you know, knocking out pieces for all these publications. But then you came to a conclusion that that's not what you want to, or you wanted to do something else. How'd you make that decision?
Well, basically, I don't think you can do justice to a book if you are divided. If you're trying to write for a magazine or a newspaper or website and then trying to do a book on the side, I just don't believe you can put everything into it that's required. A book takes a tremendous amount of effort, time, commitment. Your mind has to be on that book 20, I hate to say it, but almost 24/7. You have to be thinking when you're just walking down the street about an idea, somebody you want to interview, whatever. And it's just so hard to balance that with magazine articles. And I just decided book writing is what I love the most, and that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of your books have been as told too.
Right.
How did that come along? And by the way, your last book is Unguarded with Scottie Pippen.
Yeah, I didn't I didn't sort of naturally gravitate to that. That's sort of how I did a book with a former U.S. Open golf champion, Ken Venturi, who was on CBS for many years. And I really enjoyed that process. I wouldn't have thought 15, 20 years ago I want to do collaborations. But I have enjoyed that tremendously because you get to know, you know, Bill, when you write a column, you do a piece and you kind of get to know somebody a little bit, but you never feel like you really get to know them. And only in a collaboration can you spend the required amount of time to understand a subject. And when I did it with Ken, and I did it with Lee Steinberg, and I just loved the whole process. And I decided this is the kind of book writing I really want to do. I still want to do my own projects separate that I like, Ali Frazier, but this has been a great source of fun.
Yeah. So I remember when you told me a while back that you would about the Pippen collaboration, and you know, I thought that was fascinating. And of course, it's been in the news. You know, it's been in the news for quite a while, the relationship between Pippen and Jordan. Tell me how that came about, and how did you find Pippen to be?
Yeah, basically, my agent and I discussed it one day, and a couple of weeks later, I met Scotty at a restaurant in Beverly Hills. And we had about three or four more meetings where we just talked. I had the tape recorder on, but we just chatted about his career, his life. And for me, that part of the process was, is this someone I want to get to know? Is this someone I want to spend time with? Because if it's not someone that I get along with, a year and a half is a long time to try to see the person and be able to tell that person's story. But I knew pretty quickly this is someone I really wanted to work with. His candor, his decency, his integrity, all that came out very early. So we met about three or four times, and then I worked on, it took me months to really put together the proposal I wanted to put to do. And then once that happened, my agent shopped it around and we got the deal.
What made you think of Pippen? Like, what was it about Pippen that made you even, you know, talk to your agent about that?
There are a lot of different athletes out there who I feel, for as much as they've been in the public eye, their stories have not been told. And he was definitely very close to the top of that list. I loved watching basketball during the 90s, even more so than I like it now. And so I was mesmerized by the Bulls, by the battles with the Pistons, the battles with the Jazz, everything. And so I really wanted to dive into that further. And I knew that Scotty had never told the story. And so that's how it all came about.
Yeah. What did he, you know, there have been the recent controversies, but what's the overarching theme? It seems like the overarching theme is Scotty feeling he wasn't being appreciated. And he really honed in on The Last Dance, you know, the 8-part series called the Pandemic Series that riveted everybody. Seemed like that really got under his skin. What did he want to accomplish in this, as you guys spoke?
Yeah, well, I think it's interesting. There's a difference between what's been carried mostly in the press and what really the purpose of the book was. The purpose was Scotty wanted to make sure people understand it is a team game. He was a consummate team player. Look at the box scores. Look at all the different areas in which he contributed night after night. Basketball is not an individual game. It is a team game. That is the essence of what he feels. And so what the documentary did was it showed Michael, and it didn't really bring out who the Chicago Bulls were and how they accomplished everything as a team. So that's really what he wanted people to understand and take away from this book.
Yeah.
Is it true that, or do you think that he feels underappreciated? Because I mean, he was a top 50 all-time guy. He is a top 50 all-time guy, Hall of Famer. But do you feel he does feel underappreciated still?
To some degree, but I don't think really that's the essence of it. I think he feels that, you know, The Last Dance was like this. Who would have thought all these years later we would get another look at that team? I can't think of any other team in history where 20 years later or so, we go back and revisit it. It was almost as if it was happening in real time. And I think he just felt that he wasn't represented the way he wanted to be and should have been. I don't think overall, he feels underappreciated just through. But a lot of people who watch that documentary were too young to see the Bulls in life in real time. So that's the impression that they got, I think.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's, you know, that's the whole thing about life in some ways. I remember when Muhammad Ali, when they were doing the Muhammad Ali Museum, and I walked through it. And, you know, as a journalist, I was thinking, you know what? Everybody, every person should have their own museum, because that's how you tell your story. You know, that's your reality. You know, you choose what you put in the museum. And I guess that's sort of what Pippen was about.
I just think that we now, the way the media is, where athletes are difficult, it's more difficult to get an athlete. That you got the layers of people you have to go through. And a lot of them want to tell their stories in a Players Tribune or something, where they don't have to be accountable to things. And I think it's important that athletes have that form. Because if you don't tell your story your way, then you have to just depend on how others tell it. And I think Scotty wanted to make sure he got a chance to tell it his way.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, when you guys started this, was the Last Dance going on? Was this post Last Dance or during Last Dance?
We had actually started it right before the Last Dance.
Mm. That must have been fascinating.
Yeah, we just before. And yeah, it was really interesting because we had just talked a little bit, and then the Last Dance comes out. So then it certainly brought a whole new narrative to what we were talking about. No question.
Well, what did you think about it? What did you think about? And again, you know, you were born in Albany. You know, you're a New York person.
Right.
Probably like maybe you're a mercenary sports writer with no allegiances except to the project at hand.
Exactly.
But as the Last Dance unfolded, what was your thoughts about it? I don't know what you thought about Jordan going into this or about Pippen going into this, but what were your thoughts with each episode?
Well, I definitely realized pretty early on that it was more of a Jordan documentary than an examination of the whole Bulls. And I was zeroing in on Scotty, no question. I was just watching every moment that he was on to try to figure out, what does this mean? How do I now approach him about these issues? The quality, I mean, what they were able to bring out, the story, from the way they told the story was fascinating in so many levels. And for me, again, it was just, what does this mean about Scotty? That's what I was caring. When you have to have this kind of tunnel vision when you work on a book, you have to really focus that way. And I was able to do that.
What was your take on the media? You know, we've mentioned the media a couple times here and the way they go about it and the way they framed the story and even the response to the documentary. What did you make of the way the media framed, you know, how, you know, Jordan and Pippen in the documentary?
Oh, how they framed it back last year when it was coming out?
You mean? Yeah, when the documentary was out, like in terms, you know, rehashing everything that happened, did you feel that Scottie Pippen was being treated fairly by the media in response to the documentary?
Yeah, I think some people treated him fairly, some didn't. I think that I don't think they touched upon some of the themes that came out in the book that we worked on in the book, though. I don't believe Scotty, if I'm not mistaken, did any interviews regarding the documentary. I think certain things were alleged to what he felt through other people. But I mean, it was incredible. It was really well done. I mean, nobody can dispute that. But again, a documentary, it's supposed to be the Last Dance, which means the 97-98 season. And Scotty felt that. So, for example, why was the 1.8 seconds brought in? Why was all that in 1994? That's not part of the Last Dance. That's one of his points.
Right.
And there were things like a very important play where he two important things when he told Malone that the mailman doesn't deliver on Sundays. A really cool moment in the finals. That's not in there. His steal in the end of game six in the 97 finals, not, they show it, but it kind of, there's no great emphasis to it. So certain things that I think he would have liked to have been in there that weren't.
I'm just curious, during while you were watching that, I'm sure he was, well, he'd already seen it, but
right.
Was the thing where you were calling him up, like, sort of, you know, after each, during commercials or afterwards? I mean, what was that like?
Oh, no. But we would talk afterwards. We would talk like 2 or 3 days later or whatever. I wasn't calling him up during commercials, but I've done that kind of thing before, actually, with somebody else. But not in this case. It was more just taking a lot of notes and themes that I wanted to explore further. But that's where the pandemic was. It was interesting. I mean, not only did it give... You wonder if the pandemic had not happened, this was going to be on during the NBA Finals. Which meant, I mean, people after watching the finals or around that, how interested would they have been in watching this during that time? Somewhat, but not to the level it was at. This was the only thing we could watch, right?
Right, right.
So it's hard to say how all that would have evolved. But because of all this focus, I think Scott intensified Scotty a little bit. Wait a minute, this is not how I want it to be represented in certain ways.
An interesting thing to me is, you know, you talk about how, you know, the documentary is supposed to be about the Bulls, and it became kind of all about Jordan. But, you know, I was a teenager at the time, and I feel like real time, it was kind of the same thing. I mean, it was it was the Bulls, but Jordan was, no question, the guy. So was there really should Scotty have been surprised by how the documentary came out?
I think should he have been surprised? That's the whole thing. I mean, he sort of was, and then he realized maybe I shouldn't have been.
Right, but, right.
You know, I mean, here's the thing. You know what the Bulls' record in the playoffs was with Michael without Scotty?
No.
1-9. They won. Michael Jordan won one playoff game in his career with the Bulls when Scotty Pippen wasn't there. Okay. And obviously no titles. So, you know, it's so true that Michael would, that they would not have been the Bulls without Michael, obviously, but they would not have been the Bulls without Scotty. No Scotty Pippen on that team. I don't see the Bulls winning any titles. Do you?
No, right. Unless they had another top 50 guy.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Well, I guess that gets, don't let me forget to ask you this question. I wanted to ask you what you learned about the media, our business during this process. But before I get that, but this whole dilemma of being number two in a century, you know, you did the fight of the century with Ali and Frazier. And Frazier was kind of in that situation with Ali too. I mean, it's different sports, but in terms of if there had been no Muhammad Ali, Frazier clearly may have been considered the fighter of his century. But if there had been no Ali, there would have been no Frazier, you know. Right. So how do you work with that? You know, when you're dealing with a Jordan, Pippen, Will Chamberlain, Bill Russell, we could probably go on and on and on. And although it's a team sport, it's a team sport made up of individuals. So I wonder how a guy like, and how you as an author and as a cultural critic who's, you know, dealing with this thing with Pippen and Jordan, how do you sort of break the news to both of them? Say, yes, Scotty, you're right. You know, you are unappreciated, but if there's no him, there's no you. And granted, if there's no you, there's no him. But if there's one A, if there's A and A1, you know, Jordan clearly would be A.
Well, he understands. Look, he, and this is throughout the book, he totally understands the greatness of Michael Jordan as a player. I mean, he appreciated that from day one. But I think that we in the media and we as fans get so enamored by who's number one that we too often neglect number two. And you're so right about Frazier. Joe Frazier was an amazing fighter. And he's going to be dwarfed forever by Ali, because Ali was a once in a century type performer. No question about it. But, but Frazier, that's interesting. I've never made the Frazier Pippen comparison, Bill. I have to think about that. That's really interesting. But, maybe I have a special interest in people who are not regarded by many as the number one guy. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. How did you, I know that you got to know Pippen before. How did you come out of this? Is there stuff about him? I know you probably always liked him, or
yes,
you wouldn't have done it. But as you went on this journey with him, what are some other things that you learned about him that you liked or just learned about that were new?
Well, I would say that his how he overcame, I don't think of another athlete in any major professional sport who has overcome as much as he did to accomplish as much as he did. And you look back at a father who has a stroke, a brother who gets paralyzed in a gym class, one of 12, not very, very poor, kicked off his high school team, doesn't get a college scholarship. I mean, and even when he played well in college, for the most part, until very late, nobody knew who he was. I mean, that would not happen today. Somebody's 8 years old and plays great. It's on YouTube, right? I mean, we don't have athletes under the radar as much as we did then. And just, so how do you keep believing in yourself when that goes on? How do you still feel that your path is there toward greatness? I don't know. That's something I'm always trying to understand. How does someone have that kind of confidence? He did. And he worked hard at it. And look what happened.
Did that background, do you think, it obviously had to fuel him in some way. Normally the narrative would go with someone like that. Oh, they play with a chip on their shoulder, his whole career. But Scotty wasn't really portrayed that way. He didn't play with a scowl on his face and that type of thing. But do you think he had that? He's always had that chip on his shoulder based on the upbringing.
No, I don't think it's a chip on his shoulder. I mean, I think that you have to remember also one of 12 kids. Isn't it interesting that one of 12 and then one of 12 as a basketball player? I think that he always felt his family means the world to him. And I think that the teammates in many ways became his family, on the court, and that he cherished his opportunity to play that role of a facilitator. I mean, nothing made him happier than to help other people, to help his teammates, whether it's a pat on the back, whether it's a pass in that, let's say a shooter misses four or five shots in a row. How do I get that guy in a position for him to succeed? And that, that meant there were individual accomplishments never meant that much to him. It was the team, always the team. And I think that's the essence of basketball. And he truly believed.
Yeah, but yet you have this moment, the Kukoc moment, which in a way could be interpreted as being antithetic to teammanship, where, you've got this special moment and the coach has decided that this person is better to take the last shot. And in the spirit of the team, you would think that you just go out and participate. But what Scotty did was not do that. How do you, again, you spoke to him about it. You were there in the moment, years ago. Now you had, decades. How do you reconcile the two things? His love was of being a team member versus that moment.
Right. Well, two things. Number one, he's asked to throw the ball in bounds. So he's not even on the court as a decoy, as another option. They can't get the ball into Tony. So, I mean, and when you're take the ball out of bounds with 1.8 seconds to go, there's nothing. You're done with the play. You're not going to get that's not enough time for you to get the ball back and take a shot or do anything. So that was one. But he had for so long, been, in the eyes of many people, obviously second to Michael on that team. Now this is his team. And so he wasn't rewarded with his moment. The game was tied. They missed a shot. We're going to OT. So I think that he really feels that he was denied his moment. Can you think of an athlete of that level given a chance in these days, not given a chance to make? I mean, find a player comparable to Scotty, and the game is tied in a playoff game, and that guy doesn't get the shot. To me, it would be hard to find somebody like that.
Right, right. But you're not supposed to. But in his theory, under his theory, that's the pride. And I'm just debating this because it's in his theory of being a team player, you're saying there's a team player, but there's also been respect of your status, of your stature. So in some ways, it's a conflict. I mean, based on the theory, you're supposed to kind of swallow your pride and go sit on the bench and then, celebrate with everybody afterwards, have cake. But you're saying that that's not realistic.
Well, I think respect comes into it. I think that he was, he deserved that moment. He truly, he had taken a team without Michael Jordan, 55 wins, far beyond what anybody expected. And then you're, and yet you're not giving him a chance to have his, he never had his individual moment where he made some great shot at the end, never in a big game like this. He made great defensive plays at the end and all that. And this was his moment to do that. And it's an incredible, in his mind, it was a great lack of disrespect. But I understand very well, Bill, what you're saying. I get the sort of dichotomy here. I do.
I would have been pissed off too, by the way. And of course, you know. And then he went right into my wheelhouse where he brought in racism and said that it was also, you know, I'm the last one to object to somebody who made the Great White Hope. So, I mean, but what did you make of that when he said, when he, because that touched off a firestorm too, when he said, well, that.
Yeah, but as it explains in the book, I mean, this is just something he told himself for years because he was so upset about being denied his moment. But this, once those comments came out in print, I think he realized, I know he realized that, you know, that's not really, that's just the frustration he expressed, and that that's not his true feeling about Phil. Okay. And it was just disappointment, great disappointment that he wasn't given his moment, period.
Yeah. And it's all, it's like he, you know, he had played, like you said, he played the ultimate teammate role for so long. And then, you know, the obvious opportunity for him to get some credit comes and he doesn't get it. I'm also wondering about, you know, you talk about they won 55 games that year without Jordan and as Pippen as the best player. A lot of people give credit to Phil Jackson for that. So it's almost like even in that sense, he doesn't get, you know, true amount of credit for that season even.
Well, yeah. Here's the thing with Scotty. I mean, there were two times that he came fairly close to a moment that would have established his, perhaps his greatness in a different way, separate from Michael. Number one was the 93-94 season, 55 games. They're down 2-0. They go to a game seven. And let's not forget, game five in that series where they were, the Bulls were up and Hugh Hollins made a call at the end of, near the end of the game that really, in many people's, even was many people's opinion, was a terrible call. And the Bulls would have won that game. They would have won, gone up 3-2. Then they would have probably beaten the Knicks in game six, won that series, played Indiana in the conference finals. You can make a very strong case. They would have beaten Indiana and then gone on to beat Houston in the NBA finals. Now imagine Scottie Pippen does all that and they win the NBA title then. Now, number two, 99-2000, 2000 season, when they played the Lakers, when he was on the Blazers, game seven, Blazers up 15 points in the fourth quarter. The winner of that game plays Indiana. Okay. Twice Scottie Pippen came and the Blazers lost that game. Lakers came back, but the Blazers were like, I think missed 13 shots in a row in the fourth quarter, something like that. So you think how close Scottie Pippen came to one or two rings without Michael Jordan. The whole conversation, the whole narrative of him would be different.
Oh, yeah.
Right. You know, the irony of this, too, is that you wrote the book in 2004, the last season, with Phil Jackson.
Right.
You know, so Phil Jackson clearly is somebody who you got to know, you know. And right. A couple things. So you got to know him. So to what role did he play in helping fill in the blanks with Scotty? Because clearly, and facilitating the relationship with Scotty, because clearly you knew him well, you know him well. Now you got her family, I guess.
Yeah, I talked to Phil a little bit about Scotty. I talked to a number of people about Scotty, and they were very teammates. I think whenever I do a book with an athlete, I try to talk to as many different people around that athlete as possible. We can't all remember every detail of our lives. Right. But I spoke to other people and brought up different, triggered a lot of details and memories that he was able to talk about. Phil was huge for Scotty. I mean, Scotty has tremendous respect for Phil. Phil comes in, Scotty, after 2 years as with Doug Collins as a coach, and really emphasizes that team with Longer Tech's winner. All right, emphasizes that team concept that Scotty believes so much in, and that made it all the difference in the world to him as an individual and through his and in his career.
You know, we talked about obviously the Kukoc shot, 1.8 seconds. The other instance in Pippen's career that always comes up as a negative for him is the 1990 Game 7 Pistons and the migraine.
All right.
You know, I get migraines, so I know you can't play a basketball game with when that happens. But, you know, it just seems like people kind of either portray it as he was just scared or faked it or whatever. So how does he, you know, remember that time period? And what does he think about, you know, the people's reaction to it?
Well, I mean, at the time, I mean, there were a couple of people in the press who really went after him for that. But I mean, this is how he felt. He played 42 minutes in that game, and people came up to him who've had migraines later on and said, how did you stay on the court for 42 minutes? He did his best. This is game 7 Pistons in Detroit. It's hard to say whether the Bulls would have been, even with Scottie at 100%, who knows what would have happened. But it was, you're right. It was a real negative, and people brought that up. But I think the interesting thing was 2 days later, he basically is back in the weight room, determined to kind of make up and determined to really get the Bulls on track for that title, their first title. And that goes for the whole team, basically. That loss to the Pistons in 1990, in many ways, was the best thing that happened to them. And they wind up winning 3 titles in a row right after that.
Right.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I told you, I just read the book, I've been listening to it. And, you know, it seems as if, I guess it's all of our lives, when you go back and review certain things, what does he say? The moving finger writes and having writ moves on. And, you know, he realized there are a couple of things that happened that he cannot erase, no matter how, you know, one of them was, you know, the migraine game. And I think there may, but, you know, and the Kukoc issue, you know, that you can't go back in history and you can't erase certain things. But it seems as if the whole tone of the book, And I don't know, maybe you've spoken with him about this, that this book, although you can't erase things in history, you could kind of make peace with what you've accomplished.
Well, not only that, you can add things. I mean, yeah. He understands the migraine. He understands the perception of the migraine and the 1.8 seconds. He's not naive about that. But look at, I can give you one example after another, how the clinching game against the Lakers in 91, look at his numbers there. There was a big game against the Knicks in 93 when the Bulls were down 2-0 and how he came through. There are countless examples in playoff games where he was the most outstanding player on the court that day. And that was pivotal for the Bulls to win in advance. He was a big time performer over and over. And that's also part of the body of work that we have to evaluate.
Do you think that Pippen, you know, he's been kind of portrayed through the book and, you know, in his interviews afterwards, that he's kind of taking shots at Michael Jordan. Is that really it? Or
one part of it, he shows some criticism at different times, but there's so many examples in the book of praise and respect he had for Michael on the court. Things that Michael did that no one else could do. He admired that and understands that. We all, sometimes the press, like, I mean, I understand, we focus on the negative, but you have to look at all of it together. And he appreciates it. Look at Michael Jordan. He asked Michael Jordan to present him at the Hall of Fame in 2010. Okay.
Right.
He has great respect for Michael.
Yeah. I thought the one part of the book where, you know, and I agree with you. I mean, he was, very not gracious, but realistic in terms of what he thought about Jordan. You know, the one where, when they were playing the Knicks and Jordan got in Xavier McDaniel's face, which is not an easy thing to do, you know, and, you know, he said that basically helped turn the tide of that series. Not that the Knicks backed down, but he just set the tone. It was Jordan who did that. And I think you're right that he acknowledges what Jordan's greatness. I guess the issue is he acknowledges Jordan's greatness, but then I ask you, but what he wishes, what? You know, he acknowledges Jordan is great, but I was here too. Is that kind of thing?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he was there too. And not just him, by the way. John Paxson, B.J. Armstrong, Will. I mean, I think it wasn't just that he was sort of overshadowed and not given enough respect. It was the other people he played with, Kerr, Longley through all the six championships. They were too often considered bit players or supporting cast. That was Michael's expression, right? No, I'm sorry. This all group belongs together.
Right, right.
I wanted to ask you about Pippen personally, because another narrative that kind of goes around is that, you know, he's bitter and he wants to sell the book and he needs money and it's whiskey. You know, how is Scottie Pippen personally, you know, doing now?
No, I mean, look, a lot of false narratives get spread, and he's very content. He's very happy. He spends a lot of time with his family. He loves his kids. So much of what I've seen out there is not accurate. And he's a great guy. I mean, the more and more I got to know him, the more I admire him. And the more I look forward to seeing what chapters are left or, you know, next in his life. I mean, I can't put it any clearer.
Yeah. What are some things, like you said, you saw our business in a new light in terms of the mistruths, half truths, doing stuff that sells. Give us some examples of things that you see, narratives you've seen that you know are just not right or just blatantly unfair or blatantly self-serving.
Well, I'm not going to be specific about these certain people, but I saw things that people said were in the book that were not in the book. And once it's reported, I think sometimes once it's reported one place, then people then jump on that. I mean, I think the media coverage by and large has been really, has been good, but just examples where I saw people just assume or take liberties with material that they thought was in the book that was not. And you have to do due diligence. You have to really examine that. And that's all.
Yeah. Is he in a good place? You just said he's happy.
Yeah, he's in a great place.
Solvent.
Holy, yes. Great place. Fantastic place. I want to be in a place that good. I want to be in a place that good. He's in a great place.
Did he talk about his son as all? His son at all? His son is at Vanderbilt. He's like, I think he flirted with the draft last summer.
Right,
He's supposed to be one of the best players in college basketball this year.
Yeah. Oh, no, he's excited beyond belief about his son and the potential there. It'll be really interesting to see what kind of season he has and what prospects are next spring. He's very proud. He's proud of all his kids.
How many children does he have, Mike?
He's had seven. One Antron died. You know, a few months back, and that was very difficult for him. You know, a lot of times, you know, we would need to do interviews and all that. But then there was a commitment. I always respected how important the commitment was to his family. And I totally, and I was glad that that came first.
Right. What, that he did not want you to talk to his kids?
Oh, no, it wasn't that. I'm just saying that, let's say I wanted to interview him on a certain day. No, I've got to be here with my son here. I've got to do something. See. All that. That's great. Fantastic. Absolutely.
It's funny. You mentioned his son at Vanderbilt. That may be one area that he'll defeat Michael Jordan. Because Jordan, neither of his sons have come close to, you know, to getting on the stage. So if Pippen's son gets drafted, he say, I may not beat you in this life. I'll beat you in the next one.
You know, that's funny. But I mean, I don't think that's, again, he's not competing against, it wasn't a competition against Michael Jordan. It was a competition. It was just, hey, folks, you know, this generation right now, we were the Chicago Bulls. We were not a one-man operation. And basketball, one-man operate teams do not win in basketball. LeBron, even when I think when Cleveland won, I mean, who, Kyrie Irving hit the key shot, right? When they won it a few years ago. When LeBron basically was one guy, he didn't win a title. He goes to Miami. It just has to be, it's a team game.
And I guess that's sort of the irony. Irony is not the correct word, but in our generation where it has to be one guy, yes, it is a team sport. But we will focus on Lamar Jackson, or we'll focus on LeBron James, where really, you know, that's just what we have to do. And if you just happen to be Scottie Pippen, for example, that's kind of your lot, you know.
Well, let me jump on that. We are an individualistic culture. The emphasis is on the individual. When they do promos for Monday Night Football, they don't say the Baltimore Ravens against the Miami Dolphins. They say Lamar Jackson, and they always have to have that individual. We sell individuals more than we sell teams all the time.
Right. One last thing for me. Well, the thing that Jordan and Scotty do agree on is they're just like Isaiah Thomas. They both, you know, and it was interesting to hear, because you do get the sense, I've always got the sense of Scotty, though I haven't really met him, spent time around him, that he is one of those persons who may not hold a grudge or whatever. You know, even here, I don't know if this book is about a grudge, it's about telling my side of the story. But clearly Isaiah will never be invited to a party. I mean, you know, he made it clear that he ain't interested in, just like his son, who was paralyzed by the bully. Said that, you know, the bully wanted, you know, years later come back. He said, no, I want nothing to do with that. And that's how Scotty is with Isaiah. The door is closed. The train has left the station.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and he gives examples of things that Isaiah said or did that support that. You know, I think the Pistons did walking off with that 7.9 seconds left in game 4 of 1991. Talked about things people have to live with. That's part of something that the Pistons have to live with forever, I think.
Right.
Don't you agree?
Yeah.
Right. And I thought we've been over this, but the whole thing with Isaiah not being on the Dream Team was always laid at Michael's feet. But what you clearly, with Scott, it wasn't just Mike. It was a lot of people.
It was in the documentary.
Chuck Daly.
Yeah. Chuck Daly did not come to Isaiah's support like people would have assumed. Yeah.
Right. Let me just ask you this. I know you don't want to compare people. You, like you said, you've done 15 books, and you've done with a lot of individuals. This is an unfair question, but you know, I'm in the media still, so I'll be unfair. But you've dealt with some very fascinating individuals. Whether it's Venturi or whether it's, Ray Allen, Sugar Ray Leonard was fascinating. I guess it's like asking you, which of your field children do you like best? Do you have sort of an all-star list of people you know, if you were going to be on a desert island and you only had room for three, you know, which three would you bring on your deserted island?
You're right. I'm not going to answer that question. but I will say this. I have learned great qualities. I have seen greatness up close, and I always try to figure out what do they possess, and I can sort of bring to my own life and the way I treat my family, my friends, and the way I try to achieve things in my professional life. Sacrifice, diligence, dedication, compassion, whatever those qualities are, I have seen those qualities in abundance in all the people that I have interviewed. And that to me means a lot as well. How do I become a better person?
Is there a thread that runs through all these people? Like, I keep thinking about Sugar Ray and
sacrifice.
Sacrifice.
It's a cliche, but to achieve greatness, you have to sacrifice. It's not natural. It's not automatic. You've got to put in the work, and all of them put in an amazing amount of work from day one. And they didn't relent. They didn't waver. They kept at it. And that's what separates them. There are a lot of great players in sports, even players who are borderline Hall of Famers, who you could probably look at and say they did not achieve as much as they could have.
Right. Because were you doing this book when Kobe died? That was February, pre-pandemic, right?
Yep.
Yes. Just about a month.
Okay. So he wouldn't have commented about that.
No,
I mean, because it didn't really happen.
But Scotty has great respect for Kobe. I mean, he really, really admired the way Kobe played and him as a person. Absolutely.
Is there anybody in today's NBA that he kind of looks at in terms of like he kind of plays like I did, or I appreciate his game more so because it's kind of how I was on how I played on the court?
I seem to recall, I can't think specifically right now, but I mean, there have been times with players like that, team players, definitely. But I can't recall exact names right now. Sorry. Yeah, but at different time to say, oh, I like the way that guy played that game that night. We talk, but I tried to stay away from that. I really wanted to focus on his time, his games, not, you know, what's going on now. But he loves the NBA. So what can I say?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Our guest has been the great Michael Arkosh, author of 15 books. More, I'm sure, as we speak now, you're getting ready. You've already thought about 16, 17. Is that correct?
That is correct.
can you share?
Absolutely not.
Just break off a piece and give me one. That's all I ask. All right. Hey, Michael, proud alum. How long you were alum of University of Michigan?
Correct.
You know, have you thought of tackling the big NCAA football industrial complex?
I would love to do a book related to Michigan at some point, and I've had different ideas. Nothing's happened so far, but yeah, I mean, I remain a Wolverine diehard. I'm still trying to figure out what is necessary for them to get in the college football playoff. Number 6 in both basketball and football right now, by the way.
Mm. Well, basketball's looking good.
Feel good story.
Juwan Howard's doing an amazing job.
Yeah, that's great. Maybe he'll be the next one.
Maybe.
Hey, Michael, this is great, man. Thank you so much, man. This has been it's been great. It's always great talking books and journalism with you and getting your insights. I guess this is one last Pippen piece. Was he satisfied with this, with the project?
Oh, yeah, he loved it. Oh, no. He got enormous pleasure out of it. And is very satisfied, and that's always something that I'm checking in on, make sure he's happy. You know, I would send him a chapter here, a chapter there, just to kind of keep things going. And yeah, he's very happy.
Right. I guess that's the difference. I keep saying I'm gonna let you go, but I guess that's the difference between writing a book with somebody and doing what we typically do. As I'll do as a columnist, rarely I'll never send somebody. I'll never even tell you. I mean, may at best. In my old age, I may say, well, I may tell you how I'm quoting you, but I'm not sending you the whole thing. There's a whole different relationship, right?
Oh, wait, have you changed? So you changed that a little bit where that was an evolution for you in saying that you're going to quote somebody. Would you read the quotes to the person?
It depends. But, you know, it's case by case. I hate even doing that. I hate even because I feel that it's, you know, if you trust me enough to, you know, do, you know, but yeah, maybe once or twice, I'll let them know this is how I'm going to quote you. And particularly if I have an issue, I want to make sure I got the context right, or, you know, but it's, you know, it's a different thing where yours, I guess you're, because in a way you're dealing with a partnership with somebody.
Oh yeah, it's in a total way. It is a partnership. Absolutely. I mean, I want him to be happy with every single syllable in that book. No question. Right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, even if you have to make a change near the end, I'd call him up and say, okay, if I do this to this, and he'd listen, and most of the time say yes, a couple of times say no, can we do this instead? Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Did you talk to Jordan about this?
No. Did I talk to Jordan? No.
Yeah. Would you want to?
I didn't see the fact. I don't think it would really – I think I would have had – where, how many questions would I have had for him? It would have been endless, and I don't think I would have gotten much time. No, really. So
right. I guess you could. Thing is, this is Pippen's book, and then you almost get into a back and forth. Which,
right.
What's the point of getting to a back and forth? Because he's not going to agree with this.
No. And by the way, and talking to other people was such a small part of the process, and that was just sort of. If there was an incident in a certain game and I heard about it, I wanted a different perspective and get more color, then go back to Scotty and ask him what his, you know, something like that. But it was never, that was just a more minor part of the process.
And did Phil ever talk to you on or off the record about the Kukoc episode? Why his rationale, why he did it, why he thought it was better?
I did not talk to Phil about the Kukoc incident, no.
Maybe you should go call him after we hang up.
Yeah. Okay, Bill, I will do that.
All right. Hey, the great Mike Arkosh. Hey, Mike, you're the best, man. I always appreciate your friendship, and I will be calling you soon.
You got it. Take care.
Thank you, Michael.
Take care, Jamal. Take care.
That was a great Michael Arkosh. Always love talking with him. You know, so what'd you think?
No, it was great. That was great. Got some insight. I feel a little more sympathetic to Pippen after that conversation.
Why did you not feel sympathetic toward Pippen? What was your perception of Pippen before?
Well, I mean, it hasn't changed my perception, but it's more like, you know, just the fact that he, you know, the book was more about him telling his side of the story rather than, you know, not acknowledging that, you know, Jordan was a great player or that, you know, Jordan is what drove that Bulls team. It's more like, well, remember, other people played a huge role and we don't think that that's being recognized. And that's fair. Right. I think in a team sport, that's fair.
Right. But what did you think of Pippen?
I mean,
that he was soft, or that he was. What?
Oh, no. Well, no, I felt that I've always felt that, you know, when he says, particularly when he says, you know, Jordan, basically Jordan wouldn't have been Jordan without me. There's no question to me that it's easily the same vice versa, or even more so that there's no Pippen without Jordan. You know, there.
Right.
You know, growing up, you watched these games when Pippen came in. It's not like he came in a ready product at all, as where Jordan kind of did. You know, of course he didn't win early, but Jordan, you know, on the court, there was really no one was his equal from the very beginning. Whereas Pippen was kind of brought along, and I always gave Jordan some credit for that, and you could give Phil Jackson credit also. But he was kind of, you know, brought along to the point where he became a player that Jordan absolutely needed and could rely on. So
right.
for Pippen taking shots at Jordan, and really, I also feel like I don't feel like Pippen has to really point all this out, because he, you know, as I mentioned before, he is a top 50 guy. He's a Hall of Famer. He is recognized as one of the best players ever. You just weren't the you know, the number one guy on that team.
Yeah, you are generally agreed upon as like the number one person.
Right.
You know, and maybe that bothers you. I don't know.
Right. And the whole Kukoc thing, that's a true stain, even more than, like I said, even more than the migraine thing. Migraine, I mean, if you're sick, you're sick, right? If people don't want to accept that, you know, that's just something I feel like people will bring up if they really want to argue against Pippen. If they really try hard to argue against Pippen, you bring up the migraine game, because you don't know what really went into that. That's what I didn't even realize. He played 42 minutes with a migraine. That's unbelievable. Like, if you know, if he really had a migraine, he played 42 minutes. That's unbelievable. But the Kukoc thing, I just don't think you can take, you know, even when you know, Michael tried to explain that away, it's very hard to do, because if you're such a team player and right. you're a pass first guy. You know, you're the inbounder, you're making the pass. You will get credit. You know, if you make the pass and the guy hits the shot, that's partly, it's an assist, technically. So you're going to get right. credit for it. So that Kukoc one is a tough one to swallow.
Yeah, it's kind of tough, particularly when you talk with a team. I mean, if you know, your son plays Little League sports, and, you know, you wouldn't tolerate that. You know, if you were a coach, you wouldn't tolerate that. If you wanted to pass him and he's like, sits down, you'd probably kick him off the team.
No, even as his father, even if I thought that he should get the shot, I'm not allowing that. You got to get in there and make that pass.
Right, right. So, Scott, you got to live with that. You know, just like Isaiah's got to live with, everybody's walking around, got to live with their decisions, you know.
Right. But it is fair for him to write a book and explain his, you know, the way he saw things and, you know, like Arkash said, you know, add to the story of what hasn't been told and explain to people who weren't there, you know, the big role that he did play. That's fair. But my thing is, I mean, you're in the Hall of Fame. We know this. You know, you're in the Hall of Fame. You're top. You're on a dream team. I mean, what other recognition do you need?
Right. Just like in Isaiah Thomas, that's something he'll have to live with, never being on a dream team.
Right.
You know,
and that was interesting. So, you brought that up about Chuck Daly, you know, not really having his back. And what is that?
Well, because I guess Daly's in a tough position because he's got to coach all these guys.
Right.
And if you're going to try to bring that up, you're not going to have a team.
Right.
Because Jordan would not have played. Scottie would not have played. And who knows Maybe Bird would not say, I'm not in the fight, but fuck, I ain't going to play without these guys.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And Bird didn't like him either. Remember Isaiah said that, you know, he
oh, yeah.
He wouldn't be anything if he wasn't
if he was black, you'd just be another player. Yeah.
Right. So I'm sure Bird had some resentment towards him as well. So, I mean, yeah, Chuck Daly was a great coach, right? He was a great coach, right. And he was a great coach of that dream team. Because he kept a tunnel focus on that team, and when he went back to Detroit, he, you know, that's different. You know, I gotta incorporate Isaiah, but the best thing for this dream team and for us winning the goal was to keep Isaiah off this team.
Right. I wonder what those conversations were like that he had. That may be another the conversation between Daly and Isaiah.
Right.
You know.
Right.
You know. So anyway, maybe we'll have Isaiah on at some point.
Yeah, well, he's at NBA TV. He's used to this stuff. That'd be a great interview, actually.
Yeah, it probably would be, yeah.
You got to reach out to Isaiah.
All right, Mike. All right, Jamal. Listen, man, this has been great. You know, get the book. Get the Pippen book.
Yes.
Unguarded. Scottie Pippen. Written with Michael Arkosh. And, of course, listen to our podcast, right?
Yes, listen to our podcast. Keep listening. If you're listening, you know you can get this podcast wherever you listen to your podcast: Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and follow us on Instagram at BrosPod. Follow us on Twitter at BrosPod. Interact with us. Tell us what you thought of our episodes and what you would want us to talk about, what guests you would like us to have, all that good stuff. And of course, as always, we are brought to you by BetOnline.
Yeah, yeah. This will probably go up soon. So, you know,
yes.
The Baltimore Ravens just lost. They lost on Thursday Night Football to the Miami Dolphins.
We'll get to the next episode. I'll give my updated.
We'll do the new quarterback
rating. New black QB power ratings. We'll update that next week. But, you know, I was thinking of having Lamar back on top based on what was going on. But that was a tough loss to the Dolphins. But a must win for my guy Brian Flores, coach of the Dolphins. He needed that win more than anything.
He needs to win more than Lamar.
He definitely needed that win more than Lamar. No question about that.
All right, everybody. You know, we'll be with you again next week for another scintillating episode of Bros Pod. Till then, continue to be careful, be safe, and continue to pray. God bless everybody.
Is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.